This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, conversations on human rights with Speak Up, Korerotia, here on Plains FM.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak Up, Korerotia. Tune in as our guests Speak Up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
No mai ki te hotaka tika tangata Speak Up Korerotia. I'm Sally Carlton and we're talking today about Gender Identity 101. The reason I've put the 101 in there is because I think it's something a lot of people don't know too much about, and also because there is so much terminology and vocab involved that it seems a bit like an English lesson in some ways. So we're going to be thinking about a lot of different terms associated with gender identity, and to help us through, we have Alice Anderson, who's from Qtopia, and Jennifer Shields, and I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your organisations and what you're here to talk about. Jen was on our show a few years ago looking at art and social responsibility, so it's cool to have you in a different capacity.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Kia ora, my name's Jen. I use she and they pronouns. I sit in a number of different spaces. I'm actually a member of Qtopia's board, but aside from that, I currently am part of a kind of like a consult co-design group led by Pegasus Health with the aim of kind of improving access to gender-affirming care in Canterbury, which is great. We've made some fantastic changes over the last 9 months. Aside from all that stuff, I'm also an artist and event producer. My background's in fine arts. It's really interesting for me how those two worlds collide and how often.
Kia ora whanau. I'm Alice. I use she, her pronouns. So I am the executive director, or the professional auntie, probably more accurately captures what I do, at Qtopia. Now, we're a social support service for LGBTQIA plus young people, their whanau, and their communities. And we're really actively engaged in how we can positively make social change.
Now, you've both said something about pronouns, so jumping straight in with vocab here.
The pronouns that I use are she and they, so I use both of them, she, her and hers, and they, them and theirs. And it's just quite a common thing, I guess, in our sort of circles as part of a standard introduction, just so everyone knows how each other like to be addressed.
Absolutely, just as a sign of respect.
Alice, would you mind explaining LGBTQIA plus?
LGBT is probably the terminology that we're most familiar with, which obviously means lesbian, gay, bisexual, and trans. I use LGBTQIA+, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer or questioning, intersex, and asexual. And then the plus referring to all those that do not have their identity featured in the acronym as yet. What we like to say is, be as inclusive as possible. If you can remember all of those, that's wonderful. If you can only remember the plus on your LGBT plus, that's what's really important. And rainbow to speak to the community and the experience, and is a really kind of gentle way of acknowledging the fact that this is a really diverse community. It's a really nice umbrella term, especially for those people that don't have their identifier included in the acronym as yet. So obviously this is not one singular community. So what's really important is that we kind of pay mind and pay honour to the fact that this is a really diverse group of people all kind of coming together under that one terminology.
I think that's really important to think about, that people might not yet have a term that describes what they feel.
Coming back to the acronym for a moment, particularly the T for trans, as that's the main focus of today's gender identity discussion. Am I correct in thinking younger people tend to use the term transgender and might be a bit uncomfortable with the term transsexual, which is often used by older generations?
There's a lot of tricky discussion that often goes on there. I think a lot of the younger generation interpret it as a bit of an outdated term, and also there are some older standards of what it means to be trans that are often aligned with that term transsexual. Like, there are people who use it today to mean a trans person who has been on hormone treatment and had the surgery, and that term can only apply to them, which isn't accurate whatsoever. Anyone can use it, but I think that's why a lot of the younger generation are a bit uncomfortable with it, because it sometimes has those implications. And I think there's a lot of maybe not quite conflict but discomfort between kind of those two generations, because one of them really likes that term and one of them really doesn't. But I think it's important to acknowledge that it's a valid term of identity that a lot of our elders prefer.
And this is why these conversations are so important, so that we can create space for one another to be, you know, who we are.
In the acronym, we've got the Q and the A. Q standing for questioning, but also queer. I personally love it because I feel like it says I'm queer. You don't need any more detail. Like, you don't need to know anything else. And it's often also used as kind of an overarching identity description. And some people are a bit uncomfortable with it because it's got a bit of a history as a slur. But that kind of reclamation process started kind of in the 70s and 80s with ACT UP and all of that. And I feel like it's got a really great history. Questioning to anyone who is unsure or thinking about it or just doesn't quite know yet. And I think maybe one of my favourite truisms or phrases or mottos is that if you're questioning it, it's probably valid. And then A, there's lots of talk about how the A should be for ACE people and not allies, but at the same time there's a lot of really good discussion about how including allies in the acronym enables our closeted whānau to safely attend queer events without outing themselves and being able to participate. And I think, like, while it's obviously really important that we have spaces that are safe and kind of explicitly for the queer community themselves, we definitely need to have spaces that are also open to people who can't out themselves by coming.
It's so important to allow people to self-identify and then to be to honour the terminology that a person identifies with, because it's really about how we express and understand ourselves and each other, you know. So we really want to put one another in a box so that we can compute each other, right? But really, the human experience is complex and intricate and diverse, so we have to allow for that in the language that we use. And what I think is so important about finding this terminology is that for so many of our young people that I work with, and for so many of us that are within the queer community, finding the word that fit the feeling that we had was huge. You know, this was like this illumination of who we were. I know that for myself, like, coming out as bi, I now identify as pansexual, but it wasn't until I was probably in my early teens, having always known I was different, that suddenly I found this word. And I was like, my whole life lit up after that. You know what I mean? Because suddenly I wasn't this, there wasn't something wrong with me, and there wasn't something strange or unusual. It was like, actually, no, this is a community of people. This is an identity that you can share in. And I see that all the time with the young people that I work with as part of our service, and how they allow one another the fluidity of exploration of identity. There's this preconceived notion within external communities, I think, that once you have found who you are, it's that forever. But as we know, it's ongoing in terms of who we become. And what we see with our young people is that they are really willing to allow each other to be like, to try on different terms, to try on different identities and honour that in that moment. But also, if that shifts and changes, to honour each other there as well. So I think there's something to learn from that.
Yeah, I really like that about Q's groups. And that maybe it's just clicked for me as you've been talking about it, is that everyone's there and we're all under this kind of wider umbrella, but I don't think I've ever had a discussion in any of those groups about anyone's, like, exact identity. Yeah. Like, there's no need to get into that. Everyone's just there because there's that shared understanding. It's really nice.
Thank you. That's something that we do purposefully as well, you know, so that's if folks choose to identify or would like to have that discussion, there's always the space to do so, but it's not an expectation when you enter the space that you have to come in and be like, hi, it's me and I'm this, you know. It's like, we're just so happy that you're there.
So you're talking about discussion groups. Does Qtopia facilitate people just to come and have a chat?
Yeah, absolutely. For us, our job is to hold space. You know, we're there to provide safe, welcoming spaces for all members of the LGBTQIA+ community to come and connect. We typically have various age ranges, and we also have a really wide and diverse group of trained facilitators. So there's always someone there for you to talk to and someone there that has shared experience as well.
Let's get a bit more into the terminology then. We're looking today at gender identity. How would you describe that?
I think gender identity is your kind of personal and internal sense of your gender and what that is. And it may or may not match with the gender you were assigned at birth, which 99% of the time is when a doctor looks at your genitals and decides that's what that is.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So that's sex rather than gender?
Yeah. Yeah, gender or sex assigned at birth is the quite common terminology.
Yeah, biological sex sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's important to know that there is a distinction between the two, you know, and that gender identity, to build on what Jenna said, is very much comes from your own personal sense of self, what's in your heart, how you identify, you know, what's true to yourself and your wairua. So that's why it's important that we create that distinction for one another, because we have really interconnected this idea between sex and gender, and actually they're completely different things.
And I think at the same time, a lot of us, or like in society, we have this view of sex as a solid kind of immutable one or two things, whereas actually we know that it's very variable. Beyond the binary, there's a whole range of intersex conditions.
I think that's a really good point too, is that, yeah, we think of sex as being binary and it's not, so surely gender is not binary either. Another point, I guess, to kind of clarify for the audience is gender identity versus sexual identity and how those two differentiate and why it's important that, again, they're not conflated.
Yeah, I think it's really easy, because we're kind of all in this one community under a larger umbrella, to assume a lot of those things, but actually they're two very distinct kind of parts of our identities, and you can have like any from the long list of sexual identities and any from the long list of gender identities. There's no reason why one should mean the other or vice versa.
Good way of putting it, I think. Are there any other terms that you think we probably need to run through before we get into our conversation? I've written down, just as a starting point, cisgender, transgender, gender diverse, and gender neutral.
When we talk about cis and cisgender, so that is when the sex you were assigned at birth matches with your gender identity. And then trans, speaking to the sex you were assigned at birth not matching your gender identity or being different. Gender diverse is kind of an umbrella term which speaks to the variance and experience of gender identity, that there's no fixed form or point, and it's just important to acknowledge those that fall outside and in between this gender binary that we seem to have. And then coming to gender neutral, to speak to folks that the concept of gender does not align with them at all. Sometimes that is referred to as non-binary as well.
And how does that tie in with asexual?
Remember, gender and sexuality being very different, right? Gender being about identity and who we are, and then sexuality being about who we are attracted to. And so asexual, or ace, the ace community, do not feel that sexual attraction, or there's kind of a spectrum of sexual attraction that they experience.
Great. Just moving slightly here, thinking about if we have a sense of numbers or percentages of people who do identify as gender diverse, because it's not small.
Yeah, I think in New Zealand, probably the most recent data was from 2012 in our schools. So there's the Youth 2000 series of surveys where they go into a number of different schools across the country and ask a whole number of questions. And Youth 12 in 2012 was the first time that they asked about gender identity. And it was quite huge. I'm not going to remember the exact percentages off the top of my head, but something about the total came to nearly 4% of students who were either trans or gender diverse or unsure and questioning, which is massive. And I was at the Trans Healthcare Symposium in Hamilton in May. It's the first one we've had in this country. And there we got to see some preliminary results from the Counting Ourselves survey, which was a massive survey into trans experiences of health and well-being. And about just under 1,500 people, I think, responded. And within that data, though it doesn't look at how many of us are in the population, what I found really interesting was that nearly half of the people who responded were identified as non-binary, which is definitely a percentage we've seen increase quite rapidly over the years.
And definitely a trend that we see within the membership of our organisation as well. So, for example, our youth group, which is for young people aged around 13 to 18, and we typically will get up to 50 young people every week attending that group. And I would say nearly half of them identify as trans, gender diverse, or non-binary.
I think it'd be really interesting when we finally get included in the census to see what that population level data is like.
I think, the census is a really interesting one. And it's interesting you say 2012 was the first time they asked about gender diversity. It's not that long ago. But you're right, things are changing. And I think we will get more into that as we go on.
Yeah.
We might have a first song now. Jen, have you got a suggestion?
I was going to suggest Transgender Dysphoria Blues by Against Me. It's Against Me are a punk act from the States who, probably about 5 years ago, their like lead singer and front person came out and transitioned, and it was a very public transition, and it was just fantastic. And then the next album was entirely about trans issues and trans content, and it was great. So this is the lead single from that album.
Speak Up Court Editor here on Plains FM 96.9, and we're talking today about gender identity. We've been talking about the huge array of terms associated with gender diversity, and how many ways in which people can try and express their identity. I would think that the variety of terminology is in one respect a means of trying to come to terms with exactly what people want to describe themselves as, or how they want to explain how they're feeling. And how that's difficult within our society that tends to operate within a male-female, pretty rigid binary.
We live in a heteronormative society, right? So what we mean by that is the entire world is set up to cater to this idea that there are men and there are women and there is nothing outside or in between, and men are attracted to women and that's that. And we know that none of that is actually real, right? But the constructs by which we live our life, our societal constructs, how the world operates, is set up to support these ideals. But there are so many people whose experiences fall outside of that, and that's the work that we're engaged in, you know, is how we create a world that is more inclusive to everyone, so that everyone has space to be themselves.
Yeah, I think a really good maybe example of how our society is constructed that way came out a lot in all the various kind of marriage equality fights that happened around the world. Some of the biggest ones in the States where we had so many stories of like a queer person being in hospital and their long-time partner was unable to visit them because they're not technically family, and that's kind of a right that's only afforded to married people. And then there were similar issues around immigration and stuff. So many rights were afforded to people that were married that were systematically excluding queer people because they couldn't get married, and that was a huge reason for that fight to happen. And there are so many little bits of our society, whether that's like legal structures or just kind of social norms, that not only hold up this heteronormative structure but continue to enforce it. So it's a bit of a self-replicating system.
Like, think about your shopping experience, for example. Mm-hmm. Like entering a department store like Kmart or The Warehouse, and the fact that everything is segregated by male and female, and especially if you're thinking about the kids section, for example. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You've got boys' toys over here and they all centre around building and creation and, you know, like wheels and that type of stuff. And then you've got the girls' section, which is all pink and centres around, or you can dress up and look pretty and bake a cake and, you know, have a fluffy animal. And there's nothing wrong with that if that is how a young person chooses to identify. But we know there are so many folks that don't, you know. But these structures are enforcing this gender binary, right, which is actually damaging for everyone. If we look at like the spectrum of masculinity, for example, especially in a country here like New Zealand, where on the far end of that we have some really toxic masculinity, you know, look at the suicide rate amongst males, look at our domestic violence rates, you know, like this expectation of what a man should be has negative impact on men that are, you know, cisgendered as well, right? So if we allow one another more fluidity, more space, more room to be who we really are, if we stop enforcing this hard binary of what it is to be male and what it is to be female, the better it will be for everybody.
Mm. You mentioned the vast array of identities that exist, and I think in kind of the last decade or so, we've started to see more and more and more kind of almost hyper-specific identity labels. Like, I think within the ace kind of spectrum, we've got things like grey ace, which means someone who kind of maybe sometimes feels some kind of sexual attraction, but not all the time. And then demisexuality, which means only starting to feel sexual attraction once there's a kind of emotional bond that's formed. And I think this need we have in our community, and I think especially in our youth, to have these kind of hyper-specific labels is because the wider system that we're in loves boxes. And even though the box that you're putting yourself in isn't supported by the wider world, it can be nice to be in a box, which I think is one of the reasons why I like queer, because it's not a box.
It's an experience.
Like personally, it feels really good for me to, I think, maybe recognise some of those boxes and actually go, no, I'm going to step away from all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're right, though. The need to identify and label is very overwhelming.
Mm. And it's extremely validating as well, actually. Like, I definitely had a period in kind of like my late teens where I went and found all these very specific like labels for each part of my identity. And it was extremely validating because along with those labels, there's also communities attached to them. And it means that when you come across like a very specific term, you're like, this describes small but important part of me that I feel like is very different to everyone else, but here's thousands of people who also use this term and I'm not alone. And I think that's a huge, huge part of that identity formation and labelling experience.
You've just made me think of it now that I'm listening to you talk. Has the internet helped with this, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I think like most of the like the terms that I referenced, grey, ace and demisexual, kind of all have kind of formed in online communities and social media and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that's kind of drastically changed kind of how our community operates. We're in a really interesting situation, I think, when we, like, if you look at the queer community internationally compared to, say, like, ethnic communities or other kind of communities, we've got this maybe bit of a unique situation where we lost a lot of our elders. Like, we lost a lot of the people who came before us in the kind of AIDS crisis. That means that there's kind of been like a severing of history. The intergenerational handing down of information hasn't happened in the same way. And I think the formation of online communities and the reason they formed so strongly have been a way to kind of combat that severing and that loss.
It's and like the erasure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's great, but I'm really interested in finding ways to connect with the history and bring it into our youth and make sure that information gets passed on.
I can imagine as well, if you're particularly young and questioning, being able to have a good old Google and sort things out before you feel the need to talk with anybody might be quite affirming.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially when we think about how young people that are kind of at the mercy of geographical isolation, right? I think a lot, and we do a lot of work with young people who are in the regions of the South Island. And for them, the experience of feeling different is so compounded by the fact that you are so separate from support services or from other people like you, right? So the internet is a lifeline for so many young people who are feeling so alone for so many different reasons to kind of venture out into the cyber world and find their people. You know, it's very affirming.
Mm. When somebody doesn't feel they fit this gender binary, how hard is that?
Yeah, extremely. Speaking from experience, there are as many different kind of journeys and pathways in this community as there are people. But there are, I think, commonalities. There's like the common experience of kind of being what we'd describe as a binary trans person who is going from kind of one binary gender to another. And then there's those that kind of don't fit in between. And so many of us kind of just like swing back and forth in our journeys where we go one way and they go, oh, no, back a little bit, and just kind of shuffle around. But going back to talking about kind of the heteronormative structures of our society, it can be really hard to exist as someone who exists outside of that binary. From as simple things as like people not addressing you the right way to not actually being able to fill in a form properly because it doesn't provide options, and the amount of times myself and people I know have technically had to lie on government forms because they don't provide, you know, the right information or the right, you know, boxes.
There's also, I hesitate to bring this up because it puts a dampener on everything, but incredibly high self-harm statistics for people who are gender diverse.
Yeah, yeah. Our community sees massive rates of, you know, negative outcomes in terms of health. Like, we've got huge problems with homelessness and substance abuse and suicide and self-harm. One of the data points that came out of counting ourselves was something about 50% of our community have wanted but not been able to access mental health care in a funded service, which is huge, really, really huge.
And for us in the work that we do, like, our young people have the worst health and wellbeing outcomes across the youth sector. Mm. It's incredible to think about. And there are so many barriers to being able to access service. It's actually about when you get there, will the person that I'm speaking with be able to affirm who I am? Will they have any understanding of what I'm actually experiencing? So because our young people in some ways are like the most informed generation in the history of the world, you know, they have the self-knowledge, but then when they go to these places that are supposed to be able to provide service and support for them to not recognise each other, it's very complex for our young people to actually feel seen.
But I think on the flip side of that, there's a very easy solution,
yes,
which is treating our trans people and our youth with care and respect and validating them. We're out at the Rangiora Pride Picnic, which happens every year, and I was sitting there watching these trans kids who are like 4, 5, 10, like really young, just out there living their lives. They have supportive families, and we know that's kind of like the number one thing that improves a lot of those outcomes. If they have supportive families and supportive communities around them, then those like negative outcomes just drop drastically. Yeah.
We've been talking here primarily about Western cultures with this heteronormative lens. However, that's not necessarily the case across Indigenous cultures particularly. Unfortunately, we haven't got somebody here who can really talk to the Māori or Pacifica view, but I know that many Indigenous cultures don't see gender as a binary, but more as a spectrum. Mm. And I guess if you've got any comments to that.
Yeah, I mean, we know all across the Pacific and other Indigenous cultures that prior to colonisation, queer and trans identities, really similar to what we recognise today, were totally accepted and valued. And there are quite a number of cultures around the world where actually people that we would describe today as trans or non-binary were actually highly respected and almost spiritual and kind of leaders. In Māori, we have the term takatāpui, which is used today to describe anyone kind of under that rainbow umbrella. But we also know that we've kind of lost terminology in the process of colonisation. Like, there are words that previously existed to describe these identities in Te Reo that no longer do. And yeah, I've been finding it really interesting watching kind of in the international online discourse, people kind of judging places that have been colonised for their backwards views on gender, when it's actually the Western world that's come in and put these backward views on. And then we step back and go, well, that's not great, but it was kind of our fault in the first place.
Our next song is Angel Boy by Randa.
And Randa is a New Zealand, like, trans and non-binary musician.
It's like a fist fight. I feel like 11 and I got a blood nose. I know I'm gonna win it this life. If a winner is a sinner and I got a dark soul. I got enemies, bleach blonde wearing jeans. I got enemies, look a lot like me. Yeah, look a lot like me. Yeah, look a lot like me. Closer to chaos, closer, closer. Do I look like a poser, poser? Go down, get down, go stoner. Slow down, speed up, life so fast. Jumping out a plane, no parachute. No fear, don't care. Photoshop looking like, cause I looking like, that's a real life looking like. What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? Every night like a montage. Here to party, but I'm not about that rock star. Stone kit like a stock car. Chicken Vans with the floral sock, pop hard. All these vibes so bumpy. Whole lot of waves, I want someone to hug me. I'm a puppy in a onesie. Cute from afar, but up close, I can't breathe. I'm a bad bitch, bark a lot. Big dress, color block. When in doubt, dab out. Fuck it up, shout loud. Now we rowdy, Ronda Rousey. Wooshy, wooshy, hangry, oh shit. High head, got a halo. Spot the fake old, look up at the Play-Doh. What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? Go, call me Andre Swagsy. Take a Snapchat, put it in a gallery. Yeah, I got a big personality. Call me Andre Swagsy. Yeah, call him Andre Swagsy. Take an Instagram, put it in a gallery. Yeah, big personality. That's Andre Swagsy. What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy? What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? Ain't y'all boy, ain't y'all boy?
This is Speak Up Kōrero Tia, and we're talking about gender diversity with Jennifer Shields and Alice Anderson. When people identify as gender diverse, is there a standard age or a standard pathway? Jen, you've mentioned that some of the kids can be really young, but I imagine that a lot of people take quite a long time to come to terms with or recognise, perhaps, their gender identity. Yeah. Is there a pathway that people tend to take?
What we see a lot in our community is, especially with our trans children, for them it's when they're faced with schooling, when they enter primary school, that they suddenly go, hang on a minute, I fall outside of these two options that I'm being given, you know, and their experience at home or at kindy prior to that, where gender is not really an issue, you know, you just are who you are. But suddenly when they enter education, which does a lot of separation based on gender, can be really confronting for our young people. And we do see some seed being planted there, you know, that continues to kind of grow and develop and blossom. And there's no correct pathway. And just because you didn't know when you entered school does not invalidate your experience discovering your gender either. But that is something from the work that we have seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a friend who, amazing mother, has this young child who has always been able to dress however he likes and has always picked bright colours, tutus, all the amazing things. And a couple of years ago, when he was about to start primary school, had this horrible kind of couple of weeks where he started pulling all the girl clothes out of his closet and was like, "Mum, chuck them away, I can't wear these." And she was devastated, and it was, he hadn't even started school. It was just that prospect that even in those kind of like couple of months before entering the schooling system, that starts to kind of get enforced. And bless his heart, he changed his mind. It was a sweet little thing. Still a fabulous child. But yeah, we're definitely starting to see it younger and younger, and a lot of people get very anxious about that. But realistically, like, there is no downside to supporting and validating your child and their gender expression, no matter what way it is. There's so much tabloid nonsense about child sex changes, which is absurd and not a thing that happens anywhere. The only medical intervention that happens with kids is when they are just about to hit puberty, and they will take puberty blockers, which literally just prevent the onset of puberty, to give them time to start going through the system and to be really sure of what they want. And if it gets to the point where they I'm not trans, then you take them off the puberty blockers. If they go through puberty, that's it. There's no long-term impact. There's nothing whatsoever. All that's happened is that they've been supported, which is fantastic and what we should be doing for every child. We kind of see like common pathways, but as I mentioned, for every one of us there's a different journey. People go off in different directions and come around, and
absolutely. Yeah. And there's no right way, and there's no regular time frame. You know, this is just about allowing people to be who they really are when they arrive at that knowledge, you know, and being supportive in our understanding, and to have communities around that are able to provide that afi and support for one another. But this is also about broader education, so that we feel really equipped and armed with the knowledge and the understanding and the terminology to support everyone. Everybody.
You mentioned puberty, and I would think that adolescence is probably a time a lot of people come to acknowledge their sexual identity, but you think maybe gender identity awareness takes place earlier?
I think in some cases it can. Gender being a social construct, right? So that's not something that a young person has ever had to consider before they enter an environment where suddenly this binary, this male and female, is really enforced. So we can kind of see the correlation there, right, and why that is a point of discovery, as we would call it. And again, we want to really enforce that, just because gender diverse or trans folks did not have this feeling in childhood does not invalidate their identity or their own knowledge of themselves in any way. It's just something that we have seen.
If somebody chooses to identify as gender diverse, how might they go about that? Is it simply a matter of saying, "I'd like to have a neutral pronoun now and change your name"?
It can be quite a long process, and we kind of see maybe what we would call three different strands. So there's kind of like the social transition, which is things like changing how you dress and how you look in your appearance and changing pronouns and name and stuff like that. There's the legal stuff, which is changing documents to reflect who you are, updating your, you know, birth record and name stuff and things like that. And then there's the medical side, which could be anything from kind of hormones to surgery to other interventions. And what we generally see is that people kind of pick and choose from each strand as they're needed. But quite often the social stuff is the first step, and that in itself can be really long. I'm quite an impulsive person, I think. Like, it took me a long time to realise who I was. I actually have a really vivid memory of being about 15 or so, just having this thought of like, what if I'm trans? Oh God, I hope not. They have such a hard time. And then it took another about 2 years of going through kind of like different identities and before coming to who I am. And that's continued to evolve. But I think actually when I started to change my name, it was very much like an overnight decision. I think at kind of like 3 or 4 p.m. I was talking to some friends online and was like, "Hey, do you want to try using this name for me?" And by the end of the night, it was like, cool, this is it now.
That's weird.
But a lot of other people will tell a couple of people, and then they'll sit with them using that name for months and months before they decide to start telling others. And it's the same thing with pronouns, and it can be quite a process.
Yeah.
Of, I think, settling within yourself and teasing out what feels right and what doesn't, and what feels comfortable and what doesn't, and kind of beginning to settle it all down.
Yeah. And that there's no right or wrong pathway to follow. You know, this is really about how we all navigate this journey of identity that we are all on, regardless of how we identify, right? And just allowing ourselves the space and the time and the compassion to follow that path, to be who we are.
I think one thing that's quite interesting, and I hadn't necessarily thought about too much till I was thinking about questions for this, and I guess I'd always thought, you know, it's a really personal thing to make that call, and however slowly or fast you choose to kind of make that transition. But that transition is also affecting everybody else. You know, you're asking somebody to start calling you something different. You know, changing a birth certificate, for example, that's going to have impact on how your parents are feeling, and there's going to be a lot of other people who are affected positively or negatively by that decision. Any comment you guys have to that would be great.
Yeah, it can be really tough, and it can be really hard as the person who's transitioning, because it's so much to deal with. It kind of becomes your main focus. Rightly or wrongly, it can be really hard to recognise other people's, how that is affected. And in some cases, I think that's valid. Like, if someone is just straight up, no, I won't call you that, I think that's a bit shit. And you would be right to be annoyed at them. But at the same time, I don't know, I've really come around to kind of the journey my mother went through. She definitely had a hard time with it, but now she's deaf and works out at Van Ash, and now is always like chatting to friends and coming up with kind of new and updated signs for new terminology, which
That's
is really
so cool.
Sweet. Yeah, she's fantastic. But it's definitely a thing that affects a lot of people, and I think there are definitely people I've had to leave behind because of it. And I think a lot of us will have that experience.
And one identifier that we didn't speak to in our acronym is that the A can sometimes stand for ally, right? So this is the idea of being of a support and friend to those that identify in a community outside of your own, right? And this allyship is really important for those of us who are cis to provide the space of kind of uffy and understanding for folks that are navigating transition, because it falls outside of our understanding, right? This is not how the experience that we're going through. And so when we center ourselves in it, when we say, oh, it's really tricky for me to remember your name change, remember your pronoun, that's incredibly disrespectful, right? Because it's invalidating the experience and the journey that this person is on. And, you know, it can be challenging to do this reprogramming, right? But we can do hard things. We really can. You know, so it's important that we are patient with one another, and that we are of support to each other. And I think a lot of times there is a barrier that folks can feel with offering their support, because they're so worried about getting it wrong. You know what I mean? They're so worried about saying the wrong thing or using the wrong pronoun. And so they can allow that to really keep themselves from better acts of allyship, from being of more support, even though they feel that in their hearts. And what's important to remember is that, you know, we're all learning. We're all learning at this time. And that if we do make mistakes, that what we do is we just apologize and we correct ourselves and we move on. Because when we allow a misgendering or the wrong use of pronouns to derail a conversation, you're actually putting all that pressure on the person that you have offended, not on that you meant to, but you have, to kind of be the one that gets the conversation back on track. You know, there's the one that has to do the emotional labor to make you feel better, when really we could just say, I'm very sorry, use the correct pronoun and continue the conversation.
And I think a lot of the time there's that kind of feeling to talk to the person who's transitioning about how much trouble you're having with it, which is can be really, really tough. And something that I really appreciated recently is how many kind of support groups there are that are for like friends and family of trans people that don't have those trans people in them. Like, there's a really great Facebook group for parents of trans kids, and the trans kids are not in that group, it's just the parents, which enables them to ask the stuff that I personally don't want to hear. Like, I love mum, I know she has a hard time, I don't want to hear her like asking gnarly questions about how she's dealing with that sort of stuff. But for that space to exist, where those kind of allies and families and friends of trans people can kind of share what they're struggling with and help each other to ultimately better support the trans people in their lives in a way that doesn't put the labour onto those trans people. Having that space away from the trans people, were you able to kind of ask the stupid questions that you might not want to ask when they're around?
I'm a big believer that all anyone really needs is a safe space to ask their dumb questions, you know, and that there are no dumb questions because we're all learning, right? Mm. And that's why I think compassion and understanding is so important in this space, you know, that we treat everyone with grace as well, because we are all going through this uncovering, you know, and it is really layered and it is really complex. And I sit in a lot of spaces with the families of trans and gender diverse young people, and there is a real spectrum of experience. And of course, because this young person that you have this such a solid understanding, you think, of who they are, is now wants to change and blossom and transform into something else, and that can be a real process of grief for some families. But the reality is, your young person is who they have always been. You know, you are just supporting them to be who they really are.
Mm. And that's a really good way of looking at it. Are you noticing that schools are pretty supportive of this?
Again, it's a spectrum. We have some schools that are... it's a real core focus for them, and they're really progressive and understanding. And we often find where these spaces work best is where the leadership really has inclusion at the heart of their focus, and that's just like a core tenet of the school. That's where we see it work best. And obviously, there is a spectrum in terms of our understanding, but we do know that so many of our young people who identify within the community are really passionate about creating changes in their environments, and that includes their schools. So often the shift that we see towards better inclusion of rainbow identities is actually really driven by young people, as so much kind of cultural and social change is. And then what we see is them finding that one really good ally or advocate within the school, be it a teacher or a guidance counsellor or someone on the executive, what have you, and then that seems to be able to drive really positive change. So there's definitely movement in the right direction, but there's more to be done.
Cool. Well, this next song ties in really well to this idea of schools and gender identity. You've chosen Solitude by Hybrid Rose, and there was a bit of a history behind this song.
Hybrid Rose is another trans musician. She actually went to an all-girls school, wasn't accepted in, and then all of a sudden ran into issues where some of the staff and community around the school sort of changed their mind, and all of a sudden she was having issues with bathroom access and all that sort of stuff. Now she's graduated, moved on. It was a couple of years ago now, but yeah, fantastic trans musician.
I mean, you've just reminded me, we actually did a show a few years ago as well looking at access to bathrooms, so if anyone's keen, you should check that out too.
On it.
We're talking about gender identity. I think that society is becoming more open to thinking about and talking about and including different gender identities. I think we're becoming a little bit less set on this idea of gender as a binary. I would like to hope and think so. How's New Zealand doing in terms of recognising gender diversity?
Times are definitely changing. On the legal side, we're pretty good. The sticking point currently is the process for changing birth certificates. Changing a passport is just the birth statutory declaration. You just sign a form and you write a thing that says, I'm doing this because all this, and it's witnessed by a justice of the peace, and that's that. Birth certificate, for some reason, is a family court process, so it can be very intimidating, it can be expensive, it's not so transparent or clear because a lot of the process depends on which judge you see, and there's a whole heap of stuff that goes on there. We're very, very close to changing the legislation. There was a bill in select committee that had really good changes in it and had been consulted on, and it was all set and ready to go. And all of a sudden, there was a bit of a coordinated campaign of realistically a small group of people in New Zealand backed up by a large number of people from the UK, because they have a similar process at the moment around what we call self-identification on legal documents. And a lot of their concern is completely unfounded, but they base it around like, oh, well, if anyone can change their birth certificate, then men are just going to walk into changing rooms and rape people, which is absurd, has never happened. We have a long, long list of when a similar debate was happening in the States around bathroom access, there was a list of, I think, about 50 or so organisations who work in the kind of domestic abuse and sexual abuse sector who said, actually, since bathroom access laws have changed in these states, none of that has happened. So it's completely unfounded. But because it was such a strong coordinated campaign, Tracy Martin ended up pulling the bill. So that's still up in the air and is kind of the final sticking point on the legal process in New Zealand, I think. Yeah.
But we have faith.
We have faith.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
And there, I think it's important to know that there are so many passionate and dedicated people working to create positive and lasting change for this community, whether they identify within it or without it. So we are moving in the right direction, but again, there is still work to be done.
One thing that strikes me as really positive, and we've touched on this again as well, is that young people are so much more open and aware of gender identity. And I guess moving forward, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, like seeing kids that are so, so young just be completely validated. Like I once knew someone who I think was only a year younger than me, but because they'd gone to quite a progressive school in the middle of Wellington, was actually the popular kid because they were trans, which just blew my mind because my high school, the very, very small kind of Gay Straight Alliance met in the kind of counsellors' offices with the blinds closed. So to see that shift in so rapidly and comparatively such a little time, like seeing kids who are children, absolute children, who are, you know, supported and validated by their family and the people around them is amazing. They're going to have such fantastic lives. That's great.
And we see such a huge difference in terms of like our membership and our folks that identify as trans or gender diverse and their experience and how that compares to even our young people that are coming up, say, through our youth group, right? So there's only really, say, 5 years difference between some of these folks, but what they have experienced is radically different. So progress is being made and it is being made fast, and I'm not saying that we are there yet because there is so much left to do, but it's indicative of how rapidly change is happening. It creates a really interesting dynamic within these communities because there is such a vast kind of spectrum of experience in terms of acceptance and in terms of whether the transition was positive or negative or what the challenges were. And there are so many shared factors, but at the same time, how they are received and perceived by their communities and the people around them varies really drastically.
What is needed, do you think, for both these young people who are quite open and have quite good awareness, and also perhaps the older generation who has less of an awareness? What's needed to help them get on board?
I think if we're talking about general population rather than just within the communities, it's education. Mm. You know, it really is around education. And it's about, like we said earlier, holding space for people to ask the questions that they have and to be received with grace. You know, and we do a lot of this work. And it's not about like a stand and deliver kind of presentation and now you are a master in inclusion, right? It's really about how we facilitate conversations and how we change kind of people or how we address people's unconscious bias and how we really kind of sit in a space and go, it's actually okay to kind of broaden your understanding here. You know, what we're working towards is a world where it is safe to exist for everybody. So that's no challenge to you.
So if someone listening to this now had some dumb questions, if we want to label them like that, could they just get in touch with Qtopia?
Absolutely, that's what we're here for. Always here for a cup of tea and a yarn. I think that's how social progress is made more than any other way, right, is how we connect with each other better. So yes, please do get in touch. We'd love to speak.
Anything you'd really like to say before we wind up?
I just want to mention quickly that I run a queer history series because I'm really interested, as I said, in kind of bringing that history together and sharing and learning together. It's usually on a Wednesday at Space Academy. We do film screenings and read stuff and chat about it. And it's, yeah, a really fun thing and something I'm really passionate about. I think that queer history is such a key part to keeping this rolling. Yeah.
So follow Glitterbox Pursuits on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, thanks.
No, you're welcome. And by that mark, Qtopia. So we run a really wide range of social support groups. We've got groups for Rainbow Whānau and young people under 12. We have our youth group that I've mentioned, which is for anyone around kind of 13 to 18. We have specialist support for our trans and gender diverse whānau, and we also have an over 18s group. So these groups meet regularly. They're full of really cool, passionate people. It's an opportunity to just kind of come to meet some folks within your community, make new friends, have a yarn, kind of talk to the facilitators and to get further information if you're looking to navigate any transition or just have questions about who and where you are. I am always available to sit down and have a yarn and a cup of tea about any of this. So please get in touch. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram as well as our website, which is qtopia.org.nz.
Perfect. Well, kia ora both of you for coming in and sharing what's been such a rich discussion.